for coffee. "Your driver's license," Kevin said, following her movement as if mesmerized by the gracefulness of it. "I hacked into the DMV." Helen's hand paused and her eyes widened. She pressed her lips firmly together. It was obvious to Michaela and Brian that she was trying not to laugh.
"You know that is illegal,"
Helen responded casually, tapping the spoon carefully on the side of the cup before placing it on the small saucer. "Just a little bit," Tyrell muttered under his breath, taking a large bite of toast covered with eggs.
"Oh, that's okay. I do it all the time," Kevin said, stabbing his fork into his eggs and taking a bite. "I never get caught," he mumbled around the mouthful of food.
"You just did,"
Helen pointed out, laying her napkin on her lap while politely ignoring the others, who were trying to hide their amusement.
"Did you forget that I am a detective with the Hong Kong Police Department?"
she reminded him, with a raised eyebrow. Kevin paused, his eyes wide, before he shook his head.
"Not at the moment. You're wanted for the murder of 3 men, he said, swallowing. "They've got your fingerprints all over Brian's apartment. They have you as a suspect as well, Brian."
"What?"
Helen whispered, paling and setting her coffee cup down. Kevin shook his head again.
"No worries. It's all circumstantial. Commander Yang has issued warrants for Brian, Michaela, and you. He wants you brought in for questioning. I seriously doubt you'd make it that far before they killed you, though. Sun Yung-wing and the Taiwan cartel have placed a bigger bounty on you," he added, waving his fork around between eating and talking.
"Kevin," Brian muttered, glaring at his friend.
"What?"
Kevin asked, pausing on the last bite on his plate. Brian watched his friend's gaze move around to the women's untouched meals. Kevin slowly swallowed before turning to look at Michaela and Helen with a grimace. Setting his fork on his empty plate, Brian waited until Kevin looked back at him. Brian shook his head.
"We'll finish this discussion after breakfast," he finally said, glancing at the 2 women. "It gets worse."
"My parents are going to be devastated. I know my father will have already heard about it,"
Helen whispered, staring across at Kevin with wide, stunned eyes and a pale face.
"If you will excuse me, I need some fresh air."
Kevin rose when Helen suddenly pushed her chair back from the table and slipped from her chair. He watched her hurry out of the room and up the companionway to the deck. His gaze swung to her untouched plate before moving to Brian and Tyrell with an expression of panic.
"You'd better stay with her," Brian instructed, with an intense look. "I hope to hell you've turned off your security system."
"Shit," Kevin muttered, grabbing the remote on the table next to his plate before he turned on his heel and took off after Helen.
"Helen, don't go near the railing."
Brian, Michaela, and Tyrell watched Kevin disappear up the stairs. Brian slowly shook his head back and forth. Kevin was brilliant, but lacked a filter on his mouth sometimes. He glanced up to see Michaela still staring after the 2. Reaching over, he cupped her hand in his and squeezed it. She turned to look at him, with a look of resignation. Unable to resist, he leaned over and brushed a kiss across her slightly parted lips. She blinked.
"What did you do that for?"
she asked, with a puzzled frown.
"Because I wanted to,"
he admitted, sliding his hand up her arm.
"And to let you know that everything will be okay."
Her brow creased, and her eyes flashed with brief exasperation.
"We are wanted for murder and have at least 2 people that I've never heard of who have placed a price on our heads, and you think everything will be okay?"
she asked, in an incredulous tone.
"Yes,"
Brian replied, sitting back in his seat. Michaela studied his expression intently when he released her hand and started eating. Brian could feel her staring at him, trying to understand how he could be so confident that everything would work out. His gaze followed her hand to her stomach when it growled.
"How do you know?"
Michaela asked, continuing to stare at him. Brian glanced up and gave her what he hoped was a reassuring smile.
"I have one of the smartest, richest geeks in the world hacking into every computer, a Hong Kong detective known for her tenacious ability to solve crimes, a girl who can kick ass and sail through hurricanes, and a very nosy award-winning photographer grinning at us at the moment. How can we lose?"
Michaela continued to stare at him for several long seconds.
before she shook her head and picked up her fork. Stabbing at the pile of cheesy scrambled eggs on her plate, she took a defiant bite and shot a glare at Tyrell, who was silently watching them with a huge grin on his face. Brian watched her swallow the mouthful before she turned her attention back to him and spoke, waving her fork between Tyrell and him as she did.
"You are both certifiably nuts," she finally said.
Brian released a low chuckle and grinned.
"I'm not the one who stole a sailboat when I was 16 instead of taking the bus," he teasingly retorted.
Michaela groaned and briefly closed her eyes.
"I'm never gonna live that down," she muttered,
bowing her head and focusing on her food when both men burst out laughing. Michaela helped Brian clean up the dishes while Tyrell checked the photos he had taken the night before. Kevin and Helen were still up on the deck. Kevin had briefly come downstairs to retrieve a cell phone from a basket on one of the shelves before disappearing again. Michaela figured it was for Helen from the slightly panicked expression on his face. They were just finishing up when Brian's cell phone rang. He froze and glanced at where he had laid it on the counter. A frown creased his brow, and he quickly dried his hands on the dish towel before tossing it on the counter and picking up his phone.
"Yes," he said.
Michaela watched him glance at her as he listened to the caller speak before he turned his back so she couldn't see his face. Stepping over to stand next to him, she touched his elbow. He turned, his expression hard and distant.
"Thank you," he said, ending the call.
"What is it? Henry?"
Her throat tightened before she could voice her fear. He placed the cell phone on the counter and cupped her cheeks. She gazed up at him and drew in a deep breath. She didn't see any grief in his eyes. She saw anger. This was not the emotion of someone who had just received bad news, but someone who was filled with an icy rage.
"I don't know, but it does have to do with Henry," Brian said,
staring intently into her eyes. Michaela's hands rose and slid up his chest. Her fingers curled into the soft material of his shirt. She lifted her chin in determination. Brian's gaze softened, and he leaned down and brushed another kiss across her parted lips. This one, a little longer, a little firmer, and a lot more possessive. Uncertainty swamped Michaela, but she pushed it away. He pulled back, releasing her, and turning to grab one of her hands.
"It's time for Kevin to share with us what he found out," Brian muttered,
reluctantly turning toward the stairs leading up to the deck. Michaela nodded, her lips tingling from his kiss, and her hand wrapped possessively in his. She squeezed his hand, the last of her doubt and fears melting away. 3 years ago, they had both been young and insecure. Now, they realized how fragile life was and how quickly things could change. It was at that moment Michaela realized she hadn't been any more ready than Brian had been to commit to a long-term, permanent relationship. She had been focused on getting her education, and she still had trust issues that she needed to deal with. A new sense of determination filled her. She wanted a future with Brian, and she was willing to fight for it this time. Straightening her shoulders, she followed him up the stairs and onto the deck where Helen and Kevin were standing by the railing. They turned when they heard Brian and her approaching.
"We need to know everything now," Brian ordered in a hard, clear voice.
"What happened?"
Helen asked, seeing the expression on his face.
"Ren Lu, or Zhang, whichever name he's going by at the moment, just contacted the consulate. He wants to meet to discuss an exchange," Brian replied, with a grim expression.
"Uh-oh, that's not good,"
Kevin muttered. "Let's go down to my office." Chapter 19 Ren Lu lowered the cell phone and peered through the binoculars at his target from the roof of a nearby building. The hitman belonged to an elite group of mercenaries for hire. He had dealt before with men like the man he was watching, Raul Chavez. There was no information about the man prior to 2 years ago. Chavez had been a suspect in the assassination of a minor diplomat from Hungary. 6 months later, he had been sighted again in Venezuela. Three American environmental workers had been killed in a suspected kidnapping gone bad. It might have been unquestioned if one of the families hadn't paid to have an exhaustive investigation done. It had turned out the CEO of the oil company had paid to have the workers removed because they had discovered a previously thought extinct bird in the location of a new oil well. A month after that, Chavez was spotted in Brazil. The list went on and on. Government agencies had grainy images of Chavez, but nothing concrete. They could place him at some of the assassinations, but there was not enough evidence to convict, only enough to suspect him of being involved. Chavez was always gone before anything could be proven. Renlou was certain the man was a skilled, paid assassin. His informants had flagged Chavez as a possible problem the moment he had entered the country on one of Sun Yung-wing's freighters. Renlou watched Chavez reach for his cell phone at the same time as he paid for a purchase at an open-air restaurant. Renlou glanced at his own phone, noting the bug he had placed in Sun Yung-wing's cell phone flash the number Sun was calling across the screen. He was positive it was Chavez's number. He watched Chavez slide the phone back into the front pocket of his shirt before he pulled the chopsticks out and began eating while he walked through the crowded marketplace. Minutes later, Chavez crossed the street and entered the building where he had rented an apartment. Renlou moved along the edge of the roof. He skirted an abandoned makeshift boxed garden and jumped over the wall, landing on the slightly lower roof of the building next door. Renlou knelt down behind a rusted metal fire escape. From this angle, he could see into the sixth-floor flat where Chavez was staying. The door to the dingy room swung open, and Chavez entered, tossing the remains of the meal he had ordered into a trash can by the door. Renlou watched Chavez disappear into another room. He shifted and scanned to see if he could pick him up through the other window. Chavez reappeared several minutes later with a large case. A satisfied smile curved Renlou's lips when he saw Chavez pull out the pieces of a sniper rifle. The bait had worked. Sliding back far enough to keep from drawing attention to himself, Renlou stood up, turned on his heel, and headed for the door leading down through the building. His call to Sun Yung-wing had worked. He knew if he told his employer that he had discovered that Harrington's contact was meeting up with Detective Wu from the Hong Kong police to exchange information on the missing American, Sun would notify the mercenary. He glanced down at his watch. He had 6 hours to finish setting the trap. Before the end of the day, he would have the information he had been trying to get for the past year, and he would have Michaela Summerlin. One he would deliver, the other he would keep for himself. "It's a trap, man. It has mousetrap written all over it," Kevin said with a shake of his head when Brian finished telling all of them about the phone call he had received a few minutes ago. "You'd be crazy to follow through, and there's no way in hell I'd let you take Michaela and Helen along with you." "I agree," Tyrell said, from where he was sitting toward the back of the group. "The meeting does have trap written all over it. Haven't you seen any of those movies where the bad guy demands a meeting just to knock off the good guy?" Brian started to say something, but snapped his mouth shut when both women turned to glare at Kevin and Tyrell with a look of warning. A wry grin curved his lips when he saw Kevin sit back and raise his hands in the air, and Tyrell snapped his mouth shut and leaned back in the chair with his arms crossed. Behind Kevin, more than a dozen computer screens mounted to the wall showed different images or bits of information that his friend had uncovered last night. "Go over the information," Brian ordered, nodding to the first screen. "In order, so we can follow along with your thought process." Kevin released a snort and swiveled in his chair. "Good luck with that." "Okay, screen number one," Kevin said, touching a button on the keyboard so that only the first screen appeared. "I'd like to introduce Captain Cheng Li Zhang of the Chinese People's Liberation Army. The man has more lives than a cat. I found the same info you did about him dying in the helicopter crash, but I also located 6 other aliases for him, and 6 other tragic accidents." Brian watched the screens light up one at a time with images of the same man, along with different names, occupations, and causes of death.
It was the last one that held his attention. He recognized the man from the brief glimpse he had caught of him outside the cafe. It was obvious, from Michaela's swiftly inhaled breath, that she recognized him as well. Resurrected, he is now called Ren Lu. A week ago, he became Sun Yongwing's head of security, Kevin added, touching another button on the keyboard and bringing up the image of Sun Yongwing. I ran a background check on this guy, and let me tell you, he's a piece of work. If you ever have a chance to do business with the guy, run like hell. If you don't believe me, ask his former head of security. Oh, right, you can't. What happened to his former head of security? Michaela asked, a shiver going through her at the cold, dark eyes staring outward. I found a reference to a location offshore in about 600 feet of water, Kevin muttered. I think you could safely say the guy is fish food by now. Gross! Remind me to never eat seafood again, Michaela replied, with a repulsed expression. What else did you find out? Brian asked, leaning forward. Sun Yongwing is involved in some serious shit. I haven't been able to access everything, but I suspect that he isn't shipping the stuffed bunnies that are listed on the invoices. The shipment weights, numbers, and destinations are all wrong. I'll work on a program to see if I can't run some analysis to figure out what type of cargo it is. But I'm guessing either human cargo or something more valuable, Kevin replied, pressing another button. Getting back to Ren Lu. Someone doesn't want him found. The information I showed you is all there is. If they have anything else, it isn't in digital form. Kevin moved the latest image of Ren Lu to another screen, and the next series of images came up. Your man, Harrington, was smart. He knew that the information he had was worth a fortune, and would likely get him the weighted ankle bracelets next to the head of security if he was caught. The flash drive he was carrying was encrypted. I have had a few minor issues accessing it, but ultimately no one's a match for this brain, Kevin continued, tapping his finger against his head. Such modesty, Helen murmured with a raised eyebrow. Kevin shook his head. I've got the degrees, or lack of them, to prove it, he quipped with a wink. No, seriously, my brain eats encrypted code for breakfast. I love the challenge. Anyway, once I cracked it, it didn't make much sense at first. Take a look. Brian sat back and stared at what looked like a bunch of lines. There was a picture of a single sheet of paper. On the paper was a series of numbers and lines, some straight, some curved. It almost looked like a child had scribbled on it. What is that supposed to mean? Brian asked in frustration, shaking his head. Kevin chuckled. I had that same WTF moment when I first saw it, he admitted. What guy would be willing to die for a picture of a bunch of scribbles? I told you that I love challenges, right? Well, I did some research on Harrington and discovered the guy loved to create puzzles. How did you find that out? Helen asked in amazement. Old college yearbooks, Kevin replied, pressing a button on the mouse and pulling up a screen. He was voted the most creative mind in puzzle design by his classmates. There were several comments about his ability to take an image and break it down to its most simple form, tear it apart, mix it up, and put it back together. It is kind of like those slide puzzles where they take a picture and mix up the tiles and you have to keep sliding them around until you get all the pieces in the right place to tell what it is. Brian glanced at Kevin, who was grinning. You were able to get the tiles in the right place, he guessed. Yep. All it took was understanding Harrington's capabilities for doing what he does best. Breaking the image down, tearing it apart, putting each line on a tile, and then moving it around until the picture appears. I wrote a program that ran about 100,000 different versions of it, which was productive because there was not one, but three individual puzzles hidden within the single image. Each puzzle is a clue to where I suspect Harrington hid the information that you were looking for, Kevin explained, pointing to the puzzles on the screens that were moving through the different positions. So where did Harrington hide the information? Helen asked with a frown, blinking in surprise when the screens went blank one by one until only three images remained. That looks like a building. It is. This is the engineer's office of the former pumping station, also known as the Red Brick House, on Shanghai Street, in Yao Ma Tei, to be exact, Kevin replied. He clicked the mouse under his hand to bring up a transparent line drawing of the old building. It was built in 1895 and is the oldest pumping station in Hong Kong. This is the only section of the original building still standing. It has been used for many things, including a post office and a homeless shelter, but is currently empty while the city decides what to do with it. Why would Harrington go there? Michaela asked in confusion.
I wondered the same thing, until I cross-referenced the building along with some of the other clues in Harrington's puzzle.
Do you see these combinations of letters and numbers at the bottom of the tiles? Unless you solve the puzzle correctly, they don't mean a thing. But if you put them in order, they make more sense, Kevin explained with a grin. The guy loves puzzles. What better way to create one than to do it through geocaching?
Geocaching? Tyrell repeated, glancing at the numbers.
Isn't that where people do a scavenger hunt using GPS locations and landmarks to hide things?
Yep.
You have to go to them if you want to get the clues where to go next, Kevin said, his voice softening as he stared up at the three screens.
He created a puzzle within a puzzle. Each one will lead you to the next clue until you find where he hid the cache. The flash drive you gave me contained the information on where to start. If you find the first cache, it will lead you to the next.
Will we have enough time to find each one before we're supposed to meet Ren Lu in Victoria Park?
Michaela asked, biting her lip in worry.
Brian shook his head.
No, he replied in a quiet, thoughtful tone before he glanced at Kevin.
How long do you think it would take someone else to do what you did with the flash drive?
Kevin shrugged and rubbed the back of his neck. He swiveled around in his chair to look at the others with an intense expression. Brian could almost see the wheels turning in Kevin's brain while his friend processed what he had done.
Honestly, if they are even half as good as I am, 48 hours at least.
If they aren't as talented, longer, Kevin replied.
And if they were just as good as you or better?
Helen asked in a quiet tone. Kevin's brow furrowed and he pressed his lips together. Brian could tell Kevin was biting back a sharp retort. He had to hand it to his friend. Kevin did a good job of controlling himself.
If they are as good or better, which is highly unlikely, by the way, then I would say 24 hours or less, Kevin reluctantly muttered.
What are we going to do?
Michaela asked, turning to look at Brian with pleading eyes.
If he'll tell us where Henry is, we have to do something.
We go to the first location and find the clue to the second one, Brian said, staring up at the screens before looking at the others. Then we'll meet Ren Lu at the statue in Victoria Park. I'll give him the flash drive, and we'll get the information about Henry. Helen and I will go after Henry while Tyrell and you locate the second clue. Once we have Henry, we'll leave him here with Kevin and meet up with the two of you.
I'll fit each of you with a GPS tracking device. That way, I'll have real-time access to you. I can hop on several different satellites to keep the feed live. I can also help guide you from here to the next location and tell you what to expect, Kevin said, with a grim expression.
It is almost 10 o'clock. We need to get moving, Brian said, rising out of his seat.
Chapter 20 Brian and Tyrell walked along the dock ahead of Michaela and Helen. Michaela fingered the watch that Kevin had given her. Helen wore a matching one, while the two guys had slightly larger, more masculine ones. It would appear that was another one of Kevin's soft spots, buying fake designer watches from the kids who littered the sidewalks, peddling their collections to unsuspecting tourists. Kevin had opened the back and inserted a small tracking device into each one before sealing it and syncing the times. Michaela glanced out over the water. The morning was a beautiful one, much different from the last couple of days. The weather had warmed up a little, moving into the low 70s, so all she needed was a light jacket over the dark purple silk blouse that Kevin had ordered for her. She wore a short black leather jacket and matching black jeans. She had opted for her own hiking boots, which worked out well since they matched her jeans and jacket. Michaela had braided her hair to keep it out of her way. She glanced over at the others. Helen was wearing the cream-colored silk blouse with a pair of dark blue jeans and low-cut cream-colored boots. She had a dark red leather jacket that
really complimented her pale complexion and jet-black, shoulder-length hair. Kevin hadn't been as creative with Brian, settling for a pair of faded denim jeans, a black t-shirt, and a matching black jacket. Tyrell was dressed in his usual jeans, button-up white dress shirt, and gray pullover sweater. Both men carried a backpack on their shoulders. Michaela bit her lip when she remembered that she'd forgotten to ask Brian about his arm. She should have offered to change the bandage on it this morning.
"Thank goodness we are off that dock," Helen muttered under her breath. "I keep expecting to fall through it at any time."
Michaela released a strained chuckle and nodded.
"I know, but you have to admit that it probably helps deter wayward tourists from venturing down it," she reflected, walking over to Tyrell's car.
"Thank you," she whispered when she saw Brian standing with the door open for her.
"Michaela," Brian said, reaching out and touching her arm.
"Yes,"
she replied, looking up at him. His hand slid up her arm to tenderly touch her cheek. She turned her face into his palm, feeling the warmth and soaking it up. At that moment, she knew she still loved him, that she had never stopped.
"Whatever happens, you make sure you stay safe. I want you to run like hell if things go south. Run and don't look back," Brian ordered, in a slightly desperate tone. "I need to know that you are safe."
Michaela knew her eyes gave away her thoughts. He must have seen the rebellion in them, the fact that she wouldn't flee, she would fight. He bent and captured her lips in a passionate, desperate kiss. His fingers tangled in her braid, holding her to him. It took several long seconds before he reluctantly released her and stepped back. His face was grim with determination.
"I won't be stupid, Brian," she promised. "If I need to run, I'll run. But I won't leave you or any of the others behind."
Brian's lips twisted into a bitter smile.
"Not like I did," he muttered in self-condemnation.
"We both made mistakes. It wasn't just you," she whispered, before she reached up and pressed her lips against his to silence his protest.
She pulled back and gazed at him for a second before sliding into the back seat. Brian closed the door and slid into the seat in front of her. Their eyes locked in the rearview mirror before she pulled away, distracted by Tyrell's humming.
"Shut up," she muttered when he grinned at her. "K-I-S-S-I-N-G,
Tyrell teased.
"It's good to see you together again."
Michaela shot Tyrell a scowl before she leaned over and brushed a kiss against his cheek. As crazy as he drove her at times, he was also the one to remind her to embrace life and not always be so serious. Straightening, she caught Ryan staring at her again, his eyes warm with humor and love. She swallowed when a wave of heat filled her.
"You got it bad," Tyrell whispered,
his eyes glittering with amusement.
"I should have drowned you when I had the chance," she growled, rolling the window down so that the sounds of traffic and wind could drown out his laughter.
Michaela was glad Brian was the one doing the driving. Not only was her head still trying to get around the fact that the cars drove on the opposite side of the street, like the British, but the traffic and number of signs made her head spin. Helen was giving Brian directions whenever they came to a gridlock on where to turn. It also helped having two people know where they were going and the different streets that would get them there. She had learned over the last couple of days that Hong Kong had wide streets that were very, very busy and narrow streets that were, well, very, very busy. The narrow streets were made even more claustrophobic by the tall high-rises that loomed up over them and the congestion of pedestrians as well as the motorized traffic. A wave of longing swept through her. Henry and she should have been out on the open sea by now, heading east, then south, along the shipping lanes. She closed her eyes and lifted her chin to the infrequent patches of sun that slipped between the buildings. With the motion of the car and the wind in her face, she could almost imagine that she was on the Defiance, cutting through the waves with nothing to stop her. It was a nice dream, until the smell of exhaust and the piercing sound of a motorcycle going by forced her to roll up the window. She gave Helen a wan smile when the other woman glanced at her with a worried frown. Michaela sat back against the seat and stared out the window.
"Do we have any idea of exactly what we're looking for at this place?" Tyrell asked.
Kevin printed out the images. In the lower corner is a GPS location. Normally, most devices are only accurate to within 10 feet. Kevin gave me a military-grade unit accurate to within 2, Brian said. It's in my backpack.
He already programmed in the wave points, Helen murmured. Once we find what we are looking for, it should give us a location of the second site. Kevin says the image shows a Buddha, but it could mean anything. The wave points will give us the actual location. Harrington reversed the last puzzle. We need whatever clues he left at the second location to find the third spot, and the information that he stole. In the first puzzle, he gave us an image of the building. There isn't anything else. Kevin said we should find what we need inside the building, but there isn't much information to guide us, just the image of the building and a few lines with an arrow on it. He believes we need to locate the arrow inside the building to find the location of the second puzzle.
Don't forget, we've got to figure this out before the bad guys do, Tyrell pointed out.
Michaela shook her head.
Even if they do, without the first piece, it will be virtually impossible for them to know where to look. They would have a much more difficult time solving the puzzle.
Yes, Helen agreed.
Yet not completely impossible.
Which is why we are going to find the first one and solve where the second one is before we meet with Renlu this afternoon, Brian said, glancing up in the mirror.
We should rent another car, Helen suggested. We will need 2 vehicles.
I'll stop after we finish at the red brick house, Brian said.
If one of us rents it, won't they be able to trace it?
Unless Tyrell rents another one, Michaela asked with a frown.
Brian flashed a wry grin. I've got that covered, he promised, turning onto Shanghai Street. What are we going to do about this afternoon? Tyrell asked, leaning forward and resting his hand on the back of the seat.
Helen, Michaela, and I will meet with Renlu, Brian stated, with a thread of steel in his voice. You are going to use that powerful lens on your camera to capture some photos of Renlu and make sure that we don't have any other visitors.
I hope these little microphones really work. They look more like toys, Tyrell mumbled, reaching into his pocket to finger the tiny box containing a wireless microphone and earpiece.
If Kevin gave them to us, they'll work, Brian assured him.
Several minutes later, Brian pulled into a loading space across the street. Michaela marveled at not only his luck, but his skill at finding a spot in the lane lined with blue and green delivery trucks. Anxious to find what they were looking for, they all opened the doors to the car at almost the exact same time. Michaela's lips curved upward when she heard Tyrell mutter a curse under his breath that small cars and tall men were not compatible with each other.
It should be illegal to make cars this small. It's worse than the head on the Defiance, he muttered, and gave her the lopsided grin she loved.
Michaela shook her head in sympathy before turning to look around her. Each side of the street was lined with huge high-rise apartments. Glancing down the street, she could see a small red brick building that looked out of place among the towering buildings. Workmen, dressed in yellow and orange vests, worked nearby while metal railings ran along the roadway that looked like it was being worked on. Pedestrians walked by, going about their daily business. Along the street, a truck slowed and pulled into a loading area. Workers stood ready to help unload items from the truck into the local food and environmental hygiene department. She turned when she felt Brian's hand on her arm. It took a second for her to realize the others were waiting for her.
Sorry,
she mumbled, stepping around the car. Helen and Tyrell were already crossing the street. Michaela nodded to Brian when he shot her a questioning glance before they both darted across to join the other two. The four of them quickly walked along the sidewalk down to the 2-story colonial-style building. Michaela's gaze moved over the Chinese double clay tile roof and down over the arches that showcased the beautiful ironwork of the second floor veranda. There was only one window on the first floor facing the street, while there were 3 windows on the side closest to them. It was impossible to see inside the building through the glass, ironwork, and black shutters that covered them. They continued past and slipped behind a small brick wall to the black painted door on the other side. Tyrell stood in front of Brian, his massive 6'2", 260-pound frame blocking Brian from view. He fiddled with the camera he had hanging from his neck. Helen stood next to him, while Michaela faced both Tyrell and Helen. To a casual observer, it would look like they were having a conversation. Michaela kept her gaze glued on Brian. Within less than a minute, he had picked the lock on the door and slipped through it. Helen went next. Michaela glanced up at Tyrell, who nodded for her to go.
"I'll be the lookout and distract anyone if they come. Go find the next clue," he said, with a grim smile.
"Thanks, Tyrell," she whispered,
slipping behind him and disappearing into the building before she closed the door behind her. The interior was completely devoid of light, except for the twin glows from Brian's and Helen's cell phones. Michaela fumbled in her purse and pulled her phone out as well. Pressing the button, she swiped upward on her phone and tapped the flashlight. She walked slowly forward, gazing around. The building had been renovated into a type of theater for the performing arts, from the looks of it. The windows were covered on the inside, so the interior was dark. A stage had been built against the back wall, while a staircase across from it led to the upper floor.
"I'll check the upstairs," Brian murmured.
"I'll check along the walls," Helen said. "I guess I'll check out the other rooms, and hope there are no monsters, bogeymen, or hired hitmen waiting in the shadows, since I'm the only one without a gun," Michaela muttered under her breath, while staring after the other two when they disappeared in opposite directions.
Michaela decided right then and there that she didn't have what it took to be a police officer, spy, or whatever the hell Brian was now. Give her the ocean and a boat under her feet, and she was fine. Give her an enclosed dark area while being hunted by killers, and she concluded she was ready to climb under the bed with the imaginary monsters and hide. Shaking her head at her musings, she started across the room, heading in the direction of several doors she had noticed along the far wall. She stepped around several wooden boxes sitting on the floor and walked toward the first door. Opening the door, she saw some faint light from outside coming through the window. It looked like they may have been offices at one time. She was about to step inside when she heard Brian call for Helen and her. Turning, she closed the door behind her and hurried back toward the stairs. She paused at the foot of the staircase and gazed upward. Brian was on the landing separating the two floors. He motioned for Helen and Michaela to follow him. They climbed the stairs, their footsteps echoing in the stillness of the building.
"What is it?" she asked in a hushed voice.
"I'm not sure. I found a faint arrow on the wall upstairs," he admitted. "It looks like there is a piece of paper attached to one of the beams above it."
They shone the light from their phones up at the ceiling. Sure enough, along one of the beams, there was a small piece of paper attached to it. Michaela looked at Brian and Helen. Helen wouldn't be tall enough, but she might be if Brian could boost her up.
"Do you think you could lift me up?" Michaela asked.
Brian nodded and handed his phone to Helen. Michaela tucked her phone back in the pocket of her jacket and moved over to Brian when he squatted down. Sliding her leg over his shoulder, she steadied herself using the wall. Once she was sitting on his shoulders, he stood up, holding her lower legs to keep her balanced. Michaela stretched, her fingers barely touching the corner of the white piece of paper illuminated by the light from Helen's cell phone. It took her four tries before she was able to grab enough of it to pull it down. She held it tightly while Brian lowered her back to the floor. She carefully climbed off of his shoulders, holding on to them so she wouldn't fall. She gave Brian a brief, triumphant smile and held up the paper before unfolding it. Her brow creased when she saw a jumble of letters and a small key taped to the paper.
"What is this supposed to mean?"
she asked, blowing out a breath in frustration. Brian took the paper and the key from her, studying it. Michaela bit her lip before she reached into her pocket and pulled out her phone. She quickly did a search for geocaching in Hong Kong. A moment later, she grinned in triumph again, this time glancing at the encrypted code key from the website and the letters on the paper. She copied the key to her notes before turning to him.
"Read me the letters," she requested.
Brian read out the letters and she typed them in. Once he was finished, she started deciphering the code. Helen stood closer, watching what she was doing.
"No, that should be a W,"
Helen whispered, understanding what Michaela was doing.
"Outside Kowloon Tong MTR station, exit F, CLP box, top left corner. That's about 5 kilometers from here."
"Let's go," Brian muttered,
folding the paper and sliding it into his pocket. The three of them made their way back down the stairs. Brian switched off his light when they reached the door. On the other side, they could hear the muted voice of Tyrell laughing and chatting with someone. They waited, growing frustrated as the minutes passed. Almost 10 minutes later, Tyrell called out a goodbye. Brian carefully opened the door.
"Clear," Tyrell muttered, standing in front of the opening to cover their exit. "Damn, I didn't think that cop was ever going to leave."
"What happened?"
Helen asked in concern.
"He was an amateur photographer," Tyrell replied with a sigh. "He liked my camera and started asking questions. Did you guys find the next clue?"
"Yes," Brian replied, glancing back and forth before crossing the road back to the car.
"We need to head to Kowloon Tong MTR station."
Chapter 21. Half an hour later, Brian pulled up on Somerset Road in front of the Kowloon Tong station, a gleaming white building with blue accents. There was a small line standing at the front ticket area while exiting passengers either waited or walked down the street, heading for the next destination. Michaela saw Brian's lips tightening in the mirror when he saw there was no place to park, even temporarily. His gaze flashed over the front of the building. He turned his head when she touched his shoulder.
"We'll go. You circle around. Give me the paper," she instructed.
"Here you go," Brian said, pulling the paper with the key attached out of his pocket and handing it to her. "I'll circle around and see if I can find a spot to park along the edge of the road."
"Hopefully it won't take us long to find it," she said, taking the paper.
She glanced around to make sure it was safe to get out before opening the door and sliding out. Helen and Tyrell also pushed open their doors. The three of them hurried across the almost deserted street. Glancing around, she turned, trying to see if she could make sense of what the note said. A frown of frustration creased her brow when she turned to Tyrell and Helen with an almost desperate expression. Helen looked just as puzzled as she did.
"What is a CLP box?" Michaela asked. "I don't know. I was hoping it would be something obvious," Helen admitted, glancing around.
"Power box," Tyrell muttered. "Look for some type of power box."
"Power box?"
Michaela repeated, with a puzzled glance.
"There," Tyrell said, pointing upward. "Follow the conduits. They have to lead to a junction, or CLP box."
"This way,"
Helen said, her gaze following the line of gray metal pipes protecting the electrical wires inside. They started forward, cutting around the ticket booth. A transit worker called out to them when they started to go around one of the gates. Helen pulled out her identification and flashed it before speaking in rapid Cantonese. Whatever she said, it must have worked because the man hurried forward and opened the gate for them. Helen motioned for them to follow her, and they walked quickly around the curved wall, following the conduits. She slowed when they reached the far wall. Her gaze narrowed on a group of large electrical boxes on the wall next to a door marked "Danger, do not enter, electrical." They hurried over to them. From a distance, Michaela could see there was a tall, narrow, clear plastic box sitting on top of the one closest to the corner. Even from several feet away, she could see it had two labels taped to the side with the message, "Do not remove," on it. Michaela looked at Tyrell with a doubtful expression.
"Really?"
she asked, in a questioning tone.
"Would Harrington really hide something as important as the key to the next puzzle in such an obvious and risky place?"
"How am I supposed to know how spies think? I'm not crazy enough to get into a career where people try to kill me all the time," he retorted, reaching up and pulling down the box.
Michaela and Helen gathered around him, watching him unhook the plastic latch. Inside the container was a small notepad and an odd assortment of items, mostly junk. There was a souvenir Buddha keychain, several toys from a child's meal, a pen, some business cards, a dollar bill from the U.S. with a website written on it, and a metal pin with the words, "I love Hong Kong." Michaela thumbed through the notepad. Written inside were comments from people from around the world who were doing the geocaching. She shook her head at the other two. It was nothing that needed a key or had additional numbers on it. She handed the notepad back to Tyrell.
"Nothing,"
she said, glancing around the terminal again before pulling the paper and the key out of her pocket. She unfolded it and read the message again.
CLP box.
She touched the key. It was too large to go into the small lock on the box. Her gaze followed the conduit down to the box again. The wires stopped there, but they had to go somewhere else. Her gaze turned to the door marked electrical. She ran her thumb over the key and glanced down at the lock on the door.
What are you thinking?
Tyrell asked, replacing the plastic box.
What if...
Michaela's voice faded, and she pulled the key off the paper and walked over to the door. Her hand wrapped around the long metal handle. It was locked. She fitted the key to the deadbolt just above the handle. Sure enough, it slid in. She twisted it and felt the lock give. Pulling open the door, she glanced over her shoulder at Tyrell and Helen before disappearing inside the small room. Brian gazed down the street, waiting. His fingers flexed on the steering wheel, while his gaze followed each person who entered and left the building. Looking up, he watched a city bus approach from the other end of the street. It passed him and pulled into the drop-off space in front of the metro station. His mind wandered back to the night before while he impatiently waited. Holding Michaela in his arms again had been a combination of pure pleasure and agonizing torture. The more time he spent with her, the more he wanted. He had always had a physical attraction to her, but there had also been something deeper. 3 years ago, he had been too stupid and callow to understand what it was until he had lost it. His fingers itched to pull the ragged photo out of his wallet. Over the last few years, he had tortured himself with the urge to call or text her, but he had been too much of a coward. His job allowed him to access a lot of information, but even he couldn't stoop that low. If he was truthful with himself, he would have admitted that it was more out of fear of finding out Michaela had moved on and found someone. Someone like Tyrell, than out of any moral or ethical code. As long as he didn't know, he could still hope and dream that one day he would get up enough nerve to see her again. He hadn't been completely ignorant of what she was doing. Deep down, he figured his mom probably knew that he was hungry for any tidbit of gossip about Michaela. She often shared what she had heard from Henry with him in her emails. He had hungrily read over each piece, proud of Michaela's accomplishments, curious as to whether or not she missed him as much as he missed her, and wondering if she would ever forgive him for being a jealous fool. 2 days after they had broken up, he had made reservations to return home after he had had enough time to cool down and think things through. Only he never made it. The afternoon he was supposed to leave, he had been called into Senator Womack's office. Instead of the senator, though, it had been two other men he had never met before, offering him the chance of a lifetime to move up in his career working with foreign governments. The next thing he knew, he was in an intensive 6-month training program before he was deployed on his first mission. Brian glanced down at his fingers. He forced himself to draw in deep, calming breaths the way his handlers had taught him. His life had become too dangerous for him to think of having a long-term relationship with anyone, especially someone like Michaela, who deserved a man who would always be there to cherish her. He jerked when he felt the vibration of his cell phone. Pulling it out of his jacket pocket, he glanced at the message. His gut tightened, and he slowly responded. Harrington didn't make it, the message read. Any more info? Affirmative, he typed, pausing before adding, soon. Brian sat back in the seat and stared out the front window. A part of his mind continued to process everything going on outside the metro, while another part absorbed the information he had just received. The fact that 2 years' worth of undercover work and the lives of thousands of innocent people were at stake if they couldn't find the information Harrington had hidden wasn't lost on him. What else wasn't lost was the fact that Harrington had recently confided in him that he had a wife and son, a wife who was now a widow, and a son who would never know his father. This was another reason Brian had avoided trying to contact Michaela. The thought of loving her and having to lie to her day in and day out, to leave and possibly never come home, or to have a family and know that not only was he risking his life, but theirs if his enemies discovered them, had been too much to risk. He had asked Harrington about it just days before over a beer at one of the local bars.
It had been the night that Brian had given Harrington the orders from their handlers to proceed with stealing the information Harrington had uncovered on Sun Yung Wing's private computer. They had concluded they would have one chance to copy the files containing the detailed lists of buyers, suppliers, amounts, and locations of shipments of weapons being dispersed to terrorist groups around the world. Brian felt his stomach clench when he remembered their conversation, and the happy but also haunted look in Harrington's eyes. Personally, Brian had thought the man had been crazy, but there was nothing he could have done to change the situation. Harrington was in too deep to be pulled out without jeopardizing the mission. The only good thing was that Harrington's wife and son were in the States, visiting her sister and brother-in-law. Now, he would have to inform Harrington's handler that the British agent had left behind a family. Harrington's wife would be well compensated financially, but that could never compensate for losing her husband, or the fact that she would never know the truth of his career. Harrington insisted it was worth it, that having a wife and son made what he did worthwhile. Brian had been doubtful. A movement out of the corner of his eye drew his attention. Once again, he felt a shaft of desire and the magnetic pull of some invisible force drawing him toward the slender young woman who had just emerged from the building. He wondered if this was what Harrington had felt for his wife. Brian released a soft curse at his thoughts, shifted the car into drive, and pulled out onto the street. Within seconds, the small group was piling back into the car. He glanced over his shoulder at Michaela's smiling face. She held up a piece of paper with a series of numbers on it. "Tian Tan Buddha," she said, with a glow of triumph. "We won't have time to get there and back before we meet with Ren Lu," Helen commented with concern. "It will take over an hour to get there, plus the time to locate the item, and we still need to rent another car."
"We'll stick with the plan," Brian said, turning on his signal and merging into traffic. "You, Michaela, and I will meet with Ren Lu while Tyrell watches our backs. I'll give Ren Lu the flash drive when he gives us Henry's location. The moment we have it, Tyrell and Michaela will go to the Tian Tan Buddha while we go after Henry. Then we meet up once again when we know where the last location is. We'll get the information and get the hell out."
Michaela leaned forward and rested her chin on her arm on the back of Brian's seat. He glanced in the mirror and could practically see her mind racing with questions and concerns. Turning left, he headed back to Victoria Park. There was a car rental place, not far from the marina.
"What if he lies about Henry?" Michaela asked, in a quiet voice, unable to keep the worry out of it. "What if you give him the flash drive and Henry isn't where he says he is?"
"I'll know," Brian assured her, with more confidence than he felt. "Kevin will be listening in and can give me a heads up if Ren Lu tries to lie."
"How can he do that?" Tyrell asked, leaning forward as well.
Brian glanced in his side mirror before changing lanes and accelerating. There was a lot that Kevin could do remotely. He could keep a visual on them, listen in, and cross-check information to see if Ren Lu was telling the truth. Some of the methods his friend would use were highly classified. His connections to some of the satellites were part of the security system he had helped develop for the government, while another was just crafty nerdiness and too much time on his hands. Whatever information Ren Lu relays about Henry's location, he can cross-check to make sure Ren Lu is telling us the truth, Brian explained, merging onto the Eastern Harbor Crossway. "There's no guarantee, but my gut tells me that Ren Lu will tell us the truth about where Henry is."
"But why would he?" Michaela asked in a husky tone. "Why wouldn't he just kill him if he doesn't need him anymore?"
Brian glanced at her in the mirror before forcing himself to focus on the traffic ahead of him. Men like Ren Lu and he didn't kill unless they had to or were ordered to. If Henry wasn't dead yet, he most likely had not been ordered terminated. Once Ren Lu reported back to Sun Yung Wing that he had the information, that could change. Brian was betting that Ren Lu wouldn't terminate Henry until he knew he had the information his employer was seeking in his hand. Henry alive, whether Ren Lu had him or he was somewhere else, was still a valuable pawn. Men like them were not restricted by releasing that pawn back out into the world. They knew they could always locate them again if they needed to.
"He can kill him any time, Michaela," Brian finally replied. "He'll want to make sure he retrieves the information first."
Brian felt Michaela's hand tremble, and she drew in a swift breath.
"What happens when he finds out that we've got to it first?"
"I have to make sure Henry and you have disappeared before that happens," Brian said, turning into the parking lot of the car rental. "Then I go hunting."
Chapter 22. Victoria Park, 1500 hours. Michaela nervously gazed around her. Brian and Tyrell had parked in the parking lot located in front of one of the large pavilions. Tyrell had grabbed his backpack and taken off in the opposite direction, pretending he didn't know them, while Brian, Helen, and she had exited and walked along one of the main stone-paved paths near the South Pavilion Plaza. They passed a long line of courts filled with late-afternoon visitors playing basketball. Up ahead, Michaela could see a huge fountain where couples sat enjoying the fading sunlight while the children ran around squealing and trying to splash in the spray. She bit her lip, wondering if Ren Lu was already there, watching them.
"I spent many days playing in this park," Helen reflected, staring around her. "It seems like a lifetime ago. My parents would bring me here to race boats in the model boat pool, or to listen to the concerts at the bandstand. They still come here," she mused, watching an older couple walk by holding hands. "Do you still come here?"
Michaela asked, watching a couple of young boys turn to gawk at several giggling girls. It didn't matter where you lived, people were the same everywhere, she thought.
"It looks like a huge park." "It is. I haven't been here in years," Helen murmured. "There is a lot to do, and some of the festivals they have here are magnificent." "Did you get a chance to talk to your father?" Michaela asked, glancing at the other woman's calm expression. "Yes. Kevin was kind enough to supply me with a cell phone," Helen replied in a soft voice. "My father is a very powerful, much-respected member of the police force. Commander Yang should have taken that into consideration when he made the accusations that he did. An investigation has been started, and Commander Yang has been relieved of duty. There is still concern over those on the force that may be on the same payroll as Yang. Now that I know there is more to this case than Henry's disappearance, I've asked Commander Wang to allow me to continue the investigation alone until we know who could be trusted. Both he and my father agreed. I also thought it would be safer for Henry."
"Can you trust the person who has replaced him?" Brian asked, glancing around.
"Yes," Helen chuckled. "Captain Wang has been promoted. He is a good man with a kind heart. Yang does not like Wang because he couldn't be bought. He used his weight as an excuse. But Wang has been with the force for over 20 years.
"There's the statue," Brian interjected with a nod of his head.
"And Ren Lu,"
Michaela murmured, slowing down when she saw the tall, menacing form of the man she just mentioned standing by the railing surrounding the statue of Queen Victoria. Michaela felt a shiver run through her body when her gaze locked with his. Brian must have seen the possessive look that flashed across the other man's face before it disappeared, because he reached over and grabbed her hand. She wanted to look up at Brian, but was afraid to take her eyes off the man who had not only kidnapped Henry, but had cold-bloodedly shot her. They slowed to a standstill when they were within a few feet of Ren Lu. This was the first time that Michaela had a chance to really see the man up close and personal. The other two times, she had been fleeing for her life. She wrapped her arms around her waist when Brian released her hand.
"You are a very talented man for being a political advisory, Mr. Jacobs," Ren Lu stated in greeting, staring at Brian with an assessing gaze before turning to look at Michaela.
"And you are a very resourceful young woman, Michaela Summerlin."
Michaela's chin jerked up, and she raised her eyebrow at him, not missing the way he drew her name out, or the narrowing of his eyes when he said it. She had all but forgotten what he had said to her the last time they had met when she asked him what he wanted.
Her brow creased into a fierce frown when his silky words echoed through her mind, and she pressed her lips together in defiance as she glared back at him.
"You would be, too, if someone was shooting at you, or trying to kidnap you," she retorted in a scornful tone. "Where's my grandfather? I swear, if you've hurt one hair on that old man's cranky head, I'll do more than knee you in the groin."
Ren Lu's lips twitched, even as his eyes hardened.